welcome into the Go Blue crew. I'm Tyler Fenwick with Derek Devine. Derek, let's get something out of the way right here at the top, which is that we had to re-record a segment last week. Fortunately, things went smoothly. I don't think there were any noticeable hiccups in post-pro. That's post-production in the business.
Love it.
Who hacked into Riverside and disrupted that recording for us? Do you have any names or perhaps affiliations?
Top of my list, and we talked about this pre-show, Tony Petitti. I think he's looking for you know, anything or anyone who has information on Connor Stallions. And obviously, you know, all the way from our volunteer days to our current day. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something creative to call it, but, you know, I mostly wanted to shout out our volunteer days. We've been essentially insiders. A lot of times when you look around and you hear sources, pretty safe to assume that it's one of us. So he's at the top of my list.
We are the source to the reporters. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. And second on my list is a mix of two accounts, either Daily MSU account. I know that they are vying for, you know, to be the official Daily MSU account, and they come up in my For You page enough to know that one of the Daily MSU accounts is basically Daily UM, because they essentially talk about Michigan more than Michigan State. Prime example, you know, I think I saw someone say like 30 some tweets during Michigan Penn State, and like 10 during Michigan State, okay. Ohio State, with maybe some of them being like Urban Meyer coming to MSU type stuff. So
yeah,
and you know, as we know, so those are my suspects. But as you know, that's, you know, Michigan's the conversation, and you know, according to Harbaugh, maybe America's team.
Maybe America's team. I'm glad you mentioned that. Is that BS, or is it something we're buying?
In terms of like maybe becoming the most hated, sure. Like if you're looking at, you know, Cowboys have fans all over, but you know, a lot of people hate the Dallas Cowboys. You know, New York Yankees come to mind. Then sure.
It's not that people hate the Dallas Cowboys, though, is it? It's like we all make fun of them because they are living in some past world, right?
Yeah, and I think in that sense, too, you could probably say Michigan falls in that category, you know, according to years outside of the past, too. But it's become more and more interesting to watch the coverage of everything happening. And the segment that was missed was, I think you had just simply asked, is Harbaugh going to be coaching this Saturday? And I think I said, yes, no to Maryland, and yes to Ohio State. And though the listeners didn't hear any of that, I was wrong. And I think we all were probably surprised on the timing of what took place, like Friday mid-afternoon. Felt like one of those 4 p.m. PR news dumps. Harbaugh's not coaching.
I'm familiar. My take on this is not unique, and you might anticipate it by this point just because of how often we've talked about it. You might know this about me because I can't remember if I've said it before, but a coach's number one or one of their top priorities, like the thing that can make you a really good coach and make your team better, is to instill in them the simultaneous belief that number one, you can do anything, you can be anyone, and number two, nobody believes in you. So this is a variation on the nobody believes in you thing. Everybody's rooting against you. Nobody wants to see you do well. They're all going to discredit anything you do anyway. So props to Jim Harbaugh. I call that A+ coaching. The other part of me, though, says you brought this on yourself. So I don't know like how real this can be. America's team might be a little bit of an overstatement, but I get the sentiment going back to you got to do these kinds of things as a coach. Kirby Smart might be the best in the business at doing that.
Oh, yeah. The old underdog.
They picked us to go 5-7.
Yeah. Like who? Alabama fan boards?
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, I think part one takes care of itself. I think the players are in a position where they already feel like they can beat anybody. That's just what, you know, winning football does for you. But I think
what is
overall,
falling in here?
Sounds
I just
like
keep hearing things tumbling.
It sounds like thunder, but it's actually a probably, if I had to guess, it would be a buffalo antler that a puppy is throwing around.
Oh, okay.
Just if I had to take a guess.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the America's Team thing, kind of odd, kind of cheesy, but you get some of the best really Harbaugh-isms when things are going the way they're going. You know, for me, like, you know, he once called a, you know, quarterback shouldn't eat chicken. Chickens are a nervous bird, and completely went back on that and is now, you know, a lot of respect for chickens, you know, not hard to take care of, but highly productive. And yeah, I mean, it was quite the press conference, all with like a hoarse voice, which is even more surprising because the dude didn't coach. So was he yelling at his TV? Was he on the phone with somebody and he did arguments about how to handle all this? Like, guy comes out of the weekend not on the sidelines, and it sounds worse than if he was yelling at the refs on the sidelines. So what a week it's been.
A great week. Here's all I know. Whoever hacked into Riverside and tried to screw us up, they failed messing with us, and by extension, failed in messing with Michigan, because what they did to Penn State in a objectively like not very exciting game was exactly what I think was like a best case scenario for them, just to go in and kind of tighten their grip throughout the game, take advantage of the fact that Penn State has a very bad offense and like big time games, and actually fired their offensive coordinator right after this, which was really amusing. Like just one of those games, like we talked about, in doubt in the third quarter. And we were looking forward to that, and I knew that we would regret it. I regretted it immediately before the game started. Like, I'm shaking with nervousness. Did you have those feelings like come out of nowhere after not having them all season?
Yeah, and you know, we tried to prep for it on the show last week, but for me, just loss of appetite, not in the stomach. These things sound ridiculous, and I'm full aware of that.
They do.
But you know, definitely a, like, man, like, this is, you know, heart pumping, big environment. You know, Penn State has an intimidating crowd. And we talked about, you know, James Franklin did the whole, like, no, we prefer noon games. You know, that crowd, the stripe out, you know, not as intimidating as the end of the lights white out for sure, but still a really, really loud environment. Michigan really seemed to struggle early with the noise. You know, obviously missing a head coach too was pretty noticeable. But the amount of timeouts he had to call because the play clock was getting low. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of nerve wracking. And again, prepared for it, thought about it. We had talked about it. But once you're in the moment, it, you know, it's like, oh man, like, here it is. And then I think it kind of, you know, 14-3 does some things for you. You know, 14-9 when they miss a 2-point conversion helps. You know, you, as a fan, you always want to be at least, you know, four or more above. You know, you don't want them to tie. You don't want to be, you know, especially with the way that they're playing defense throughout. Like, you didn't want, you know, Penn State to be able to kick a field goal and tie it. But yeah, and then maybe at the end, like, briefly, like, well, if they did recover the onside kick, but again, the decision to go for two, even though the analytics say do it because you have to. I saw a lot of arguments about that after the game, by the way. You know, yeah, you feel pretty safe with how unproductive the offense was. And so, yeah, I think that nervousness kind of faded and maybe turned into frustration or confusion, or like, are they going to throw the ball? Now you look back, you know, running 32 times in a row, running the entire second half seems dominating. One of my favorite tweets was Drake Harris saying, like, that's a choice. Like, you know how hard it is to be a defense or a team and watch a team run on you and know what you're going to do, or, you know what they're going to do and they're still going to beat you. Like, and I agree. I mean, the way Corum popped off a big run for a touchdown at the end, had a pretty big run to kind of seal the game with the first down, very dominating, but in a very like slowly stabbing, drowning, choking way.
What?
Violent.
Violent.
And then followed by a lot of emotions, which I'll get poked fun at because, you know, what, Jim Harbaugh, did he die? Like,
right. I saw one of the, I think it was the Indiana SB Nation blog. I can't remember what they're called. My bad. But they made a joke like, wait,
Crimson
till the team...
Quarry? Is that what it is?
Crimson Quarry. Yeah.
Why do I know that? Like, probably because you talk about Indiana football so much and you live in the Hoosier State. But shout out to Crimson Quarry. I'm glad I could remember that.
That's really good, actually. They said, wait until the team like drapes a Jim Harbaugh jersey over an empty chair, like a memorial.
That's actually pretty funny.
That's not like too far from what feels realistic, you know? It's been a very dramatic time around here. 4.9 yards per carry. There was some explosive plays, not like 80-yard explosive, but more than I think we've seen at earlier points in this season.
I think one of them was, I think Samaje Morgan against Purdue had maybe the biggest play of the year, and then I think Blake Corum just literally tied it. Or in terms of running, I think Samaje Morgan had the longest rush, and then Blake Corum tied it, which, you know, again, you didn't play anybody until November, so it's really even more surprising that you didn't see Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards bust for a big one. But, yeah, kind of surprising that, 40 yards was the biggest run play, tied for the biggest run play of the season?
Yeah, really surprising. And what occurred to me, I think, like, maybe a day after the game, as I was thinking about it, you probably have to go back to 2020 to find the last time that an opponent's defense played so well that Michigan had to make like real philosophical adjustments. And the adjustment here was that I don't think Sherrone Moore felt comfortable letting JJ McCarthy sit back there and throw his way out of this. And you saw that with a lot of the third down runs and then, yeah, whatever it was, like 32 carries in a row. I know a lot of that has to do with you're just straight up trusting your defense and don't think Penn State's offense can do much. But it was a good adjustment on his part and the staff's part to figure out pretty early, like, look, you know, the offensive line is not going to hold up for 60 minutes against Penn State's defensive front because they were really, really good. And so JJ McCarthy throwing the ball 8 times, an unbelievable stat almost, like in a game of this magnitude, but to just totally rely on a run game that came in like fits and starts and ultimately did well enough to win. I mean, just a really gutsy piece of coaching. And I can't remember the last time, and I'm sure it didn't happen in 2021 or 2022. So that's why I think you got to go back to 2020 when, you know, Michigan would have had to, you know, do something like that and say, shoot, like, we're just getting beat. We got to figure out something else.
I think for me early, it was okay. Yes. I mean, I think that the edge rushers for Penn State were really making things uncomfortable for JJ, which, you know, throwing 8 times again is like alarming, you know, completing 7 for 8, got a pass interference, which, you know, could probably have gone both ways. Only 3 less completions than Drew Aller, who threw it, you know, more than double the amount of times, only 10 yards less. And, you know, that one drive was the touchdown drive was really late for Penn State. So at first I think, yeah, it was a lot of, maybe a Sherrone Moore not wanting to put JJ in a bad situation and find a way as a head coach, you know, an acting head coach to lose a game. And so he went with what he knows. You know, on top of being the head coach, he's obviously the lone offensive coordinator, a role that was split last year. One of the reasons it was split is because he also coaches the offensive line. So this dude literally had, you know, essentially 3 roles that he was, you know, not directly responsible for all 3. Obviously, guys are going to pick up in the absence of Harbaugh, you know, him being head coach, you know, guys behind him, like a Kurt Campbell probably helping with some play calling. But I think eventually, and I don't think that they were thinking about sign-stealing allegations or any of that, but it almost kind of felt like, you know, that similar, like, you know, again, you know exactly what we're going to do. We've done it 30 times in a row, and we just dare you to stop us. Like, you're not going to score on our defense, you know, often enough to take the lead. and you can't stop the run. You know, a run game that has maybe been, what, questionable throughout the season. You look at Blake Corum's touchdowns, and he's had a remarkable season in terms of getting into the end zone, but most of those the times he's found the end zone within the 5-yard line, if not the 3-yard line. You know, Donovan Edwards has been relatively quiet. You know, we talked about how are they going to involve him. He popped off a couple of huge runs, you know, really big for him. He apparently loves road games. This one, he split time with Blake Corum. Blake Corum came out of it bruised and battered, bloody. And I think that, you know, for me, once I kind of settled into, hey, they're going to win this game, I guess I don't care if they throw it all. It just felt like, hey, stop us. You're not going to be able to do so. And that was somewhat reminiscent of 2021 Michigan-Ohio State, where, you know, game manager Cade McNamara, even though making a couple of throws, and JJ dropped a nice one to Roman Wilson in that game, you know, they basically turned to Hassan Haskins and said, take over the game. And he did. And so to be able to run that many times in a row and win is impressive, but it's not flashy. It's not going to do anything to make Michigan look like the better team. And losing your offensive coordinator, even though you were the second highest scoring offense in the Big Ten all year round, isn't going to do anything to make it look like an impressive win for Michigan. And it always is that, you know, they finally get tested and then the test comes, you know, like, oh, Penn State wasn't that big of a test. Wait till they meet Ohio State. And fair, you know, it's going to matter what happens against Ohio State, as it will every single year, but still a quality, impressive, you know, you could say maybe even statement win, especially all things considered.
What will not be a statement win, but one you absolutely have to win coming up against Maryland, which we can talk about for a minute. It's not going to surprise anybody that the Terrapins here started 5-0 and 2-0 in conference.
When's the last time they haven't started 5-0?
Oh, man, you got to go back to 1974 to find the last time Maryland did not start 5-0. Then they went on. Here's the record: loss, 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 loss. Finally, won at Nebraska, 13-10. In that streak of losses, notably at Ohio State, 37-17, and they got blown out by Penn State at home, 51-15. We've talked about Tulia Tagovailoa as a guy who can make plays and he can be exciting to watch, but he can also make plenty of big time mistakes, which he's definitely done before against Michigan. Are we both Mike Locksley fans?
I mean, I'm not.
I am.
I would say, like, in terms of ranking the other coaches in the Big Ten, I do.
Well,
I mean,
not,
I do
I'm
feel
not,
like
I'm not
I've got.
About, I'm not talking about like coach quality or like a guy. I think it's pretty easy to like root for him and want him to do well.
Yeah, I mean, I that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think, you know, in terms of the top coaches in the league, maybe not necessarily up there, but never really heard him say anything, do anything that's really made you question much, except for, you know, maybe hiring Josh Gattis. Just kidding. Josh Gattis did some good things at Michigan, had a really bad falling out, did not work at Miami, and you know, they reunite in Maryland, and I think that, you know, great for Coach Locksley, who just was, you know, more ready to be a head coach than Josh Gattis would have been, age and experience alone. But no, I mean, he's never given me anything to gripe about, and you cannot say that about some of the other Big Ten coaches, especially this year.
No. So, Derek, let's wrap this into one. Tell me, you'll be disappointed if blank, and give me a score prediction.
It's one of those games again where you like you really have to adjust back to hoping that it's a blowout, because that's how Michigan's handled these games all season. Again, you're playing on the road, so, you know, more of a challenge than playing at home, I guess you could say. But I'll be disappointed if you don't see JJ McCarthy throw at least twice as much. And assuming, I don't want to go higher than twice as much, because I'm assuming if it is a game that gets out of hand, you know, rest everybody up that you can going into Ohio State. So I'll be disappointed if, you know, they have to only run the ball. But, you know, after last week, maybe you're not surprised. Score prediction on this one, I've kind of gone back and forth. I do feel like, I don't know, again, maybe it's just because you finally saw Michigan play somebody. So you really start to wonder, like, okay, now what version are you going to get? But just the way Minnesota has not played super well, you know, even though they did put up 17 on Ohio State, I'll probably take Michigan 38-13 in this one.
Okay. I think that's reasonable. I'll be disappointed if we see a clunky run game. I think it's one of those things where it's important to, like, get tuned up before the big one against Ohio State. Overall, we've seen both Michigan and Ohio State in the recent past stumble their way into wins before playing each other. That would be, I mean, including last season with Michigan against Maryland. Or not Maryland, Illinois. It was Ohio State a few years ago that really struggled with Maryland. Should have won on a two-point conversion. But anyway, that wouldn't really concern me. I just want to see, like, that continuity on the ground. I'm going to walk away from this, like, a little nervous if Michigan's, you know, winning but getting 3.5 a pop on the ground. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm a little nervous about next week against Ohio State. For a score prediction, I'm going to give Michigan a little more than you did, 43-15. I think this is a Maryland team that's not going to totally lay down offensively. They've got some pop in them. I'll give them 15, but I don't think this one is very close. Although I'll say it again, as nervous as I'll be if this is a game like late third quarter or something like that, I don't see it as like an indictment of what's coming against Ohio State. These kinds of things just happen. So if it does, so be it. Obviously, all you got to do is win. Before we go, Derek, we have not talked about Michigan basketball, like, at all. And they're 3-0, just beat St. John's 89-73 at Madison Square Garden, which was Rick Pitino's, you know, that was supposed to be his big night. Michigan totally ruined that. I think right off the bat, this is a better team than Michigan had last year. And I don't know, like, how far to go with it, because Juwan Howard's had some really good teams. But the way they play together and with Doug McDaniel leading things at point, yeah, Michigan lost, like, some really good individual talent last year. You had two players drafted, and then you had basically the consensus, like, number one transfer target with Hunter Dickinson. And then they, like, I think they got better, and it's three games, but I've seen enough to at least be hopeful, which isn't something I would have said like a month ago. What are you seeing from this team?
I think the first thing that really, you know, is maybe not surprised me, but just the consistency of Doug McDaniel. You know, even Rick Pitino said, you know, we were not prepared for their point guard to play that well, to, you know, dominate in the way that he dominated and has looked, you know, essentially unguardable at times. He's made a lot of great decisions. There's still some things that Michigan needs to, you know, figure out in terms of, you know, don't turn the ball over. You know, that's, you say that for any sport, but, you know, basketball, they were really giving up points off turnovers. I think it was, you know, they had two and St. John's and already had like 11 off of turnovers. But then Damari Burnett starting off like scorching hot, to see a guy who hadn't even scored against Youngstown State, a starter from Alabama, has played at Texas Tech, you know, very experienced. And that's just kind of how, you know, this team is. It's an experienced team overall. They've played a lot of minutes, and a lot of them have played minutes, you know, everywhere but Michigan. Somehow, some way, they seem to be playing as a team who has, you know, played a lot of minutes together. And so whether it's what happened, you know, over the summer in terms of, you know, the amount of work they put in, even outside of the official time and training camp and practices, whether it's a bond, you know, while their head coach is recovering from a major surgery, you know, whether it's Phil Martelli, you know, going back in his bag and really drawing things up as a guy who's got, you know, what, 440 plus wins as a college basketball head coach. But overall, I think really impressed, and it's good to see team basketball, because last year, you know, as everybody knows, especially with the talent they lost, they really lived and died by that talent, specifically really just two players in Hunter Dickinson and Jet Howard for the most part. And so when you don't have to live or die by, you know, a couple of superstars, you spread the wealth a little bit more, and it was it was nice to see a guy like Kamwa, who played really well in the first two games, still make an impact defensively, rebounds, you know, got some points, but didn't have as big of a game. But when he's not, but when he's not playing well, you know, Burnett comes out and scores 20 in the first half. And so that's the type of team you want, where any given night, a different player can be the star. You know, I think Tarsus Reed has his game coming. You know, he's not going to be the high scorer, you know, scoring center like Hunter Dickinson was and continues to be for Kansas, but he'll have his game where he's going to basically be unguardable and really kind of short things up. And so, yeah, I think this is a fun team. And amidst the football controversy, even though they're a 10-0 team and things are, you know, still looking very promising, it's really nice to see good, clean, positive Michigan basketball, because I think already at this point last year is probably win-loss, more times than we were ready for.
I'm still convinced Michigan football and basketball can't be really good at the same time, so something's got to give here.
Hey, one it of four like... programs in the nation undefeated in both. It's really early in college basketball, but you know, one of four.
That's still so impressive, though.
They'll have that graphic at least to hang in the rafters.
Yeah. It feels like this team has so many spots where it feels like you would call it maybe like an X factor, like things really hang on this player's development or something. Like Doug McDaniel, is he continuously like a superstar point guard? Is Terrence Williams producing offensively? That was a big struggle last year. Is Will Cheddar giving you good stuff off the bench? Is Terrace Reed Jr. Staying out of foul trouble and like being productive on offense while giving you that like really athletic defensive presence? Is there a thing that sticks out to you where you're like, if this happens, or if this player is able to, you know, show up consistently, Michigan will be really good?
Honestly, for me, it was if, you know, a bunch of new faces can gel together, I think that they're going to be a team that can be hard to beat, you know, on any given night. But, you know, like Big Ten basketball, always are going to beat up on each other. It's a matter of who stays the healthiest. So that was my big thing, is how well do these new pieces fit together? And in, you know, a small sample size, three games, they seem to, you know, play really well together. And then, you know, really, I think it's natural to look at, you know, filling the void that Hunter Dickinson leaves behind. You know, just looking at what, you know, what can the bigs do? You don't seem to have a lot of depth. You could say the same thing about the guards. You don't have the sure 7-footer who's going to play as many minutes as he can. Guitarist Reed and, you know, Will Cheddar, you know, a big dude looks huge this year. Like, he's definitely bulked up. The last two games, you know, you've seen something out of him that you didn't see all last year. He's already made more 3-pointers than this year in three games than all of last year, I believe. So you're not going to have, again, your 7-footer, but can you get a string of guys in and out who can, you know, guard multiple positions, hit shots from outside, or just be a guy who collects a bunch of boards and gets a lot of putbacks, like a Kamwa or a Tarsus Reed?
This thought just randomly popped into my head. I don't know why. Will Cheddar strikes me as somebody who's like going to get his first bucket late in a game where Michigan is down 17 and give that like he's too small signal, you know?
Somebody's got to take over for Hunter Dickinson, right?
I mean, it's
Big Ten basketball, so you're going to have a guy per team, if not multiple. You know, it's the classic, the white guy showboat. I mean, you saw Nick Stauskas. Nick Stauskas was doing that ultimate. When he was barely playing as a freshman. And then, man, sophomore year, Big Ten player of the year, kissing the crowd goodbye. Yeah. I mean, some of these guys are foreigners too. You know, but Mo Wagner, Franz was pretty quiet to himself, but Mo Wagner, Iggy Brazdeikis was a little bit of a talker and showboater. Hunter Dickinson, you know, more than anybody, it seemed, wearing masks to road games and just wanted to be the villain so bad.
Yeah.
Will Cheddar does a mean mug stare down. He's going to have his moments if he scores, but yeah, hopefully not down 17 when it's his first bucket with 10 minutes to go.
It just, that might be an exaggeration.
But most likely to be the player that does that. I do agree with that.
Yeah. Last thing here, I think we agree, biggest sort of question mark here is guard depth. Doug McDaniel is playing out of his mind. And I'm just looking at the minutes. He's leading the team 32.7 a game. You can't do that all season. I mean, it's a very select
few. I'm surprised it's that low. It seems like it'd be higher.
Yeah,
that does seem low. It's like I don't even see him not out there.
That's just because of, you know, two early blowouts. Right. I think he play 38 against St. John's? I mean, it was all but just a couple minutes. Maybe he can. Maybe he's part of that select few who can, like, have that kind of durability and still play really well. But Michigan needs, like, Jalen Llewellyn to come back healthy and be able to come in relief or even play alongside Duck McDaniel and just give him a break every now and then from having to be, like, the primary ball handler. It's right now, they don't seem to have that kind of trust, like in George Washington III as a freshman. You've seen Namari Burnett take over that duty sometimes. Frankly, makes me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it looks, it doesn't, like it's not as comfortable, right? Like, it looks like it's not meant to be. Not that he can't do it, not that he can't control the offense, you know, call the plays, get guys in the right set. But what you don't have is, you know, Doug McDaniel is one of those small, flashy point guards, you know, with his handles, with his voice after he makes a basket or a pass. Like, I don't know that you have seen someone more in college basketball go between the legs more times before he crosses the half court line. You know, guy's just like a walking, like, he just handles glory.
He's like a globetrotter out there.
Yeah, he really does look like a globetrotter. And, you know, he's essentially unguardable because of his speed. It's just going to be a matter of if he can float the ball over a guy's like Zach Edey of the Big Ten. But, you know, yeah, Jalen Llewellyn for sure. You know, if there's one thing you want to see, is him get healthy and him actually play some meaningful basketball for Michigan, because, again, that's what he transferred to do. And then he obviously came back for a reason, to, you know, be healthy and play. And I think that his experience just adds another guy to the floor that you can assume is going to gel pretty well with, again, a group that, you know, a lot of people probably thought were misfits. And not going to be able to replace the talent Michigan lost. But, you know, a classic mid-major for years will tell you, a good team basketball full of guys who have been hungry and, you know, want to come together in a new squad to win some meaningful games. It can do wonders for a program.
Well, hopefully that Michigan basketball team continues giving us good things to talk about. And, I mean, I'm pretty confident that the football program will take care of things on Saturday. Hopefully the only real drama is Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines, or what's the update there. But we'll get back next week and talk about it all. Nobody, as far as I could tell, hacked into this Riverside recording.
Good to go. I mean, we had the thunder from the Buffalo horn earlier, which, you know, made me a little nervous.
Well,
that something was really going to happen big time, but, you know, we're safe from that now, so.
I'm gonna like listen really closely back to these recordings, and we might be able to hear somebody tap in or like breathe, you know, like trying to be covert about it, like a spy movie. I don't know.
I'm just making stuff up. So you know, probably me. I'm the leaker.
Interesting twist. Okay, we'll get back next week. Continue talking about football. Hopefully, some basketball too. Things are still looking good there. Until then, take care out there. Go blue.
Go blue.